From the very beginning, June Scobie Rogers has pursued her goals, no matter how many people discouraged her, and many did. She grew up in a poor household in Alabama, and from the outset, it was a struggle.
When I was a youngster, we moved around from several states. My dad was an itinerant carpenter, and we ended up in Odenville, Alabama one time. That's that little pink dot on the map between Gadsden and Birmingham. And about the ninth, tenth grade, we were asked to give a speech on what we wanted to do when we grew up. And I said I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a scientist and a researcher. Well, the kids laughed at me and said I was so poor I'd never see the inside of a college. So that spurred me on to study, and I became the teacher. But I still wanted to do the research.
To qualify for a position as a researcher meant she'd have to study for a PhD. At that time, in the 1960s, almost all of the math and science PhD candidates were male. That didn't deter June Scobie Rogers, even when her professors suggested she might look into something a little less demanding.
I was teaching school at the same time I was getting that PhD, so it wasn't easy. Plus, I lived in Houston, and my degree is from Texas A&M. That's a two-hour drive. But my family allowed me to do it. They encouraged it, in fact.
Even your professors in school, when you were working on your degree, were still saying, are you sure you want to do this?
Well, prior to my filling out the application and that application process, they discouraged it, saying that perhaps I would just like to go into education degree rather than the research degree, because it included a lot of statistics and calculus and those things. And I said, no, I enjoy math. Thank you. All right.
She met her husband, Dick Scobie, when they were both in school in Houston, Texas. After graduation, he worked for the Air Force as a mechanical engineer before he became a test pilot. Later, when they were enrolling the first class of pilots in the program training them to fly the newly developed space shuttles, he was one of 11,000 men who applied and one of 35 who made the cut. He was realizing his dreams, but for his young wife, it couldn't ever have been easy.
My first big concern for Dick was when he first began as a pilot, as a young man, and we talked about life and what's important in life and what risk would we be willing to take in life. And through that wrestling with our values, Dick said, you know, I could have a desk job and die on the interstate on the way to work. So he asked, would it be all right for him to fly airplanes? And, of course, that's something he'd dreamed of since he was a child. I wouldn't discourage that. But he was a safety-conscious person, and I felt comfortable with that. So with the progression of test piloting and astronaut, it was just following along with his interest.
On January 28, 1986, Dick Scobie was commander of the Challenger 7 space shuttle, leading a seven-member crew, one of whom was a schoolteacher, Krista McAuliffe. It was the first time a civilian was to be on a manned spaceflight. Called the Teacher in Space mission, the goal was to explore, discover, and for Krista McAuliffe later to share what she'd learned with her students. The crew boarded the shuttle at 8:23 on an unusually chilly morning in central Florida. They were ready, but the flight was delayed for 3 hours because of ice that had built up on the launch pad. After liftoff at 11:23, the shuttle was in the air for 1 minute and 13 seconds. It had reached an altitude of 48,000 feet when suddenly it broke apart and fell in pieces into the Atlantic Ocean. All seven of the crew members were killed. It was the first time American lives had been lost on a space flight.
I guess I've been known as a positive person, And that's a part of my makeup, is to try to find whatever is positive, no matter what's going on. Is that there's a Chinese proverb that out of chaos, half the word is opportunity, problem, and the other half is opportunity, to find the opportunity within that problem. And I think as a child, surviving in the circumstances that I lived through helped me to overcome that poverty and that difficulty. I wrote the book, Silver Linings. It's my life before and after Challenger 7. And that it's kind of a little girl coming of age story, and overcoming problems as a child, and how I struggled and discovered my own, at about 9 years old, discovered my own formula for overcoming difficulty. And I applied that little formula, that little ABC formula, all my life, even to the point of after the Challenger accident. Used that in working with the families. When your spouse is the commander of flight, it's generally the spouse left at home who works with the other spouses and takes on a responsibility because they've had that experience. So I've felt a tremendous responsibility for the other spouses, especially the teachers, Krista McCullough's husband, because they were so unaware, and it was such an unexpected tragedy. I mean, NASA was touting that space flight was as easy and risk-free as flying a commercial aircraft.
When the Challenger 7 shuttle flight was announced, many people applied to be part of the crew. When the pool of applicants had been reduced to 10, Dick Scobie told them to disregard NASA's repeated assurances that flying on a shuttle was no more dangerous than traveling on a commercial airliner. This is still in the test phase, he told them. There are inherent risks, and he wanted them all to understand. As June Scobie Rogers sees it, NASA contributed to those risks by taking many of the decisions away from the shuttle commander, a policy they changed following the Challenger disaster.
After the Challenger accident, there was a commission report that the president organized, Rogers Commission, and when they discerned what the cause of the Challenger accident was, they had a number of recommendations. One of them was that rather than just managers making the decisions about flight launches, that engineers, astronauts should be involved, and the commander could have a final say about whether they fly or not, which was a tremendous development and a lot of difficulty for NASA to admit to. But there were some difficulties that they now will admit, and one is that the shuttle, a lovely design that launches like a rocket and glides around in space and lands like a plane or a glider. It was built so big so that it could carry all that tremendous cargo. But to carry all that cargo and to be safe enough for a cockpit of astronauts was a troublesome engineering feat. And to those people who designed it, tremendous. But now, with commercial space flight, they are working with much smaller aircraft that can be safer for people and than different cargo aircraft. And they're now actually functioning. It's pretty exciting about commercial space flight and what's happening in the future with Virgin Galactic and the X-Corps folks.
Following the disaster, many in Houston lost their confidence in the space program. But June Scobie Rogers and the other spouses of those on the Challenger flight weren't willing to let go of the potential for education. They decided they would build a center that would simulate spaceflight so that grade school students could reap the benefits without the risk. The problem was no one was really sure exactly what it would look like.
The the Challenger Center concept was difficult to describe. Had it not been for friends, engineers at Disneyland who helped me, one of my former students who was a computer games expert, and news reporters. If it hadn't been for that group, I could have never gotten the idea across. But the student helped me with describing a scenario game that Disneyland taught me how to create the image in a scenario format, and the reporters helped me to get the message out.
Once people began seeing the design for the prototype, they shared June Scobie Rogers' enthusiasm for the project, and she and her colleagues were able to raise the funds they needed to finish developing the idea. They opened a lottery, mostly among museums, for which one would be the site for the first centre. The Houston Museum was the one that put in the winning bid. Since then, 45 Challenger centres have been established across the country, as well as in Europe and Asia. It was June Scobie Rogers' drive and vision that got the idea off the ground. But of course, as she's quick to say, she couldn't have accomplished anything without lots of buy-in from people with the resources to make it happen.
So many people. Educators, CEOs of corporations, university presidents. And I think here in Chattanooga, the Challenger Center was the first. It was the 25th center, and it was the first to be built on a university campus. Since that, and I was hoping many years prior to that, that universities would take an interest, most of them have been built or been moved to a university or college campus. Few of them are located on large school campuses. But it's amazing, amazing, the work that they do.
Well, that would seem to be the obvious place to put them. But when you first started doing this, computers were pretty much, in terms of people having them in their homes, it was still, that was a new thing. In fact, they didn't really exist in that sense, did they? This is the mid-80s, right?
It was the mid-80s. Oh, my goodness.
So computers are pretty crude at that
time,
aren't they?
Yes, a computer that's as big as the back of your pickup truck did not have the power and ability that your little cell phone in your pocket has nowadays. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they were big, bulky things back then.
So apparently then, for a lot of people at least, your idea was something akin to Disney World or Disneyland, where people have an experience, but it's not necessarily an educational experience. Is that true?
I'm sure there's some things at Disney are educational. But in fact, Disney World talked to me about building a Challenger Center there. But we're definitely involved with what's important regarding STEM education, science, technology, engineering, math, education, and the opportunity for the students to communicate, work together as a team. So it's a classroom of students that spends at least a couple of hours at a Challenger Center, and often, and even better, prior to and after, kind of a pre-flight, post-flight experience, plus experiences in the classroom to support what they're doing. At the museums, science centers, and Disney, they prefer the throughput of numbers of people going through, which is fine. It's an entertainment world that's educational in some aspects, but Challenger Center is truly focused and partnered with the schools on education.
At this point, it's a commonplace that the need for more students to take classes in math and science is essential for the country to remain competitive in the future. For June Scobie Rogers, it's a particular point of pride that the Challenger Centers have been identified as prime movers in engaging and exciting children in K through 12 about math and science.
The Department of Labor has commented that Challenger Center is doing exactly what is needed in this field and that it should be a model for other programs. So that made me raise my shoulders quite high. I was pleased to hear those words.
As well you should be. I mean, talk about lemons to lemonade. You took the ideals of the first half of your life and realized them in the second half, despite the fact that, you were beset with something that most people would never want to go through and may very well be completely disarmed by, you know?
Thank you. I don't know how to respond to that. Thank you.
For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.